Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Your customer success team should have KPIs that are revenue generating, their comp should be revenue centered, and they should share in the company revenue goals just as much as your sales team. And if they don't, well, sorry to break it to you, you don't actually have a customer success team. You have a reactive customer service team. And according to my guest, you're stuck in the dark ages. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks. And today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about giving customer success a seat at the revenue table. She spent the last two decades improving revenue streams in technology and services companies by recruiting, growing, and leading customer experience teams, coaching, customized training programs, and public speaking. She's a founder at Better Growth, a consulting agency focused on helping companies maximize and scale their customer-focused teams to exceed revenue goals while creating lifelong raving fans out of their customers. Leah Shaney, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Man, I did all that. Cool.
Cool. Good job.
Yeah. So going back to what you said about the customer success, I call those CFMs if you don't have a seat at the revenue table because you're a customer failure manager.
Sad. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Let's start with the big burning question. Tell me why customer success deserves a seat at the revenue table.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've evolved, right? If you look into customer success, you can get really nerdy with it and put it back to, like, you know, Alexander Graham Bell and the telephone. But if you get honest with it and you look at SaaS in particular, you're going to see in like 1995, companies start to emerge with this idea that if someone holds the relationship of customers, that it's a better experience. Well, that's the sweet way to say it. What it really means is you keep money in the door and people keep coming back and your sales team doesn't have to be too distracted and can focus on hunting versus farming. And like marketing and other things, it started with a great purpose, but like all things in business, it needs to evolve and be able to be a profit center, right? And so when you do it wrong, and you just have relationship management, customers tend to be happy, which is good, but you become a cost center pretty soon. And so if you're not bringing in revenue, what happens is your customers keep coming in, they expect this white glove treatment, and then you can't hire to keep up with that demand. And then eventually it catches up and everybody fails. So like most things, learn to pay for yourself. I have as an adult, and it works out pretty nicely. And I think customer success is doing that, right? And the more we evolve and take over expansion and, renewals with the purpose of bringing in more money like expansion, then we tend to do pretty good in the revenue department. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And why do you think so many companies have not kept up with this evolution and are still stuck with this customer service reactive thing?
I don't know, but it helps me out a lot. It's why I have a consultancy. No, in all seriousness, I think it's because, you know, a lot of companies realized, I think customer success really becomes the heart of things when you start to lose customers, right? You're like, we've got to have customers. And I think it's just not understanding where customer success is today. So again, if you do a quick googly search, you might be just looking to start a customer success team that's focused on relationship management. But what I try to coach people to do is come in the gate swinging with the ability to grow a customer success team, which means you're going to have different departments inside of it and like different areas of focus, like you would in marketing, right? Like marketing is a great thing to compare us to because marketing started out being about the image and about all the creativity. And then all of a sudden the biggest KPI becomes new revenue generation, right? And working with sales on pipeline generation. And CS is in that same boat. So we've got our hunters within CS, which are going to be your more senior, high EQ value customer relationship members who can talk about dollar amounts and revenue growth. And then we've got your more tech stack nerdy, what I was when I started out in CS, support person that works with a different side of the brain. And like, hopefully you would see me can grow that side of the brain as we get business experience, or sometimes we're just better behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. And how do you think this, because I see a lot of companies doing exactly what you're saying, where they don't focus on the customer success piece until there's like a retention issue. And then they're like, oh no, better try and throw some resources there. How do you think if somebody's starting from scratch and kind of building the whole revenue organization from the beginning, kind of prioritizing who you hire where and stuff, mm-hmm. does it all happen at once? Where do you start to, you know, fill in that customer success gap?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I mean, if you have the luxury of doing this right from the beginning, then what that would look like is as you're bringing on your sales team, you're going to look at that, you know, first your founders are usually your salespeople when you're starting at the very scratch, right? And so as they're holding those relationships, I think once you get to the point where the founder is now, or the original executive team is now being pulled in and too much of their time is answering customer questions, that you get your first little kind of support hired, right? And so you get your support hire, you set them up. You get another one, you set them up, and then you start looking for your leadership. And the thing with leadership with early startups is oftentimes you're looking for a player coach. But mm-hmm. with the evolution of customer success, I encourage a lot of CS leaders to have the conversation with, we need a timeline and we need agreed upon areas that I'm going to be able to focus on growing this team. So ideally, if you've got funding done correctly and you have a board that understands, like they've had, you know, companies where customer success has worked before, you don't hire a player coach, right? You get the revenue to bring in a senior leader who can strategically orchestrate the growth of CS and bring in the next members, which would probably be your onboarding or your implementation team members, and then your customer success managers, you know, in tandem with that or immediately after.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think you make that justification to a board who's maybe one of these like gung-ho sales driven, you know, boards that of course you're going to tie stuff to revenue, but they kind of believe like, no, the money is all coming from net new business. Like pour the resources on there. How do you think you make your arguments to put the funding into?
Well, I think more and more boards understand the importance of it. So that helps. But let's face it, like when you're looking at series rounds, your angel investing, your series A is going to be more around land grab, right? And your series B is where you start looking at, and often way too late, your retention numbers. And then you don't have a CS team. Oftentimes it's set yet. And so a lot of boards know going in that they should start to manage to reduce churn and they should start to have customer success. But hey, if you want just like a cheesy trick, put your sales guys on it, put your sales girls on it and say, hey, we care about relationships here. They're the only ones that can do it. People start backing really quickly the idea of bringing in people to manage relationships when you take away time from sales.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good way to go about it.
Yeah. So there's the right way, which I told you first, and then there's the cheat that I told you secondly.
Yeah, great. Tell me about changing up customer success compensation and pay and all of that stuff so that it is tied to a revenue target.
Yeah. So look, here's one of the hard things about growing a team. Here's a hard thing about hard things. There's lots of them, right? You're going to bring in a leader who's going to be somebody that you're going to want to have had that experience of building something from scratch, right? Like my sweet spot in the majority of my professional career up until the last half of the last decade was building the blueprint for customer success teams at startups. So coming in and designing that. And you want somebody that's had that kind of experience because they know they failed there already and they know what to do. And then you're growing out your team. What happens is when you start to put in the right formulas and you start to get the right CS tools in place and you're using data integrity to help you scale correctly, then you're going to end up starting to bring in this more senior mindset that we're talking about that has kind of this hybrid of relationship management, high EQ, high technically savvy, you know, like understands the product inside and out, operationally minded CSM that's going to be paid handsomely, like your salespeople are, right? And so often what you find is organizations feel a loyalty to those first employees and they force them into the senior position because they're like, they've been with us since the beginning, 6 months ago. But if you have the right conversations with your employees, they understand that this transition is going to happen. And so when I came in as a leader, I would look at the 2, 3, 4 people that were dedicated there. And I would say, we're going to have a wave of hires. They're going to come in above you. But you are going to always be one of the first employees here. And as you grow your career, which my goal is to help you, you can grow in that direction. But yeah, you pay them handsomely like you do your sales team. And I'm talking like a great base pay with a variable comp that is revenue generated. So I like to look at net revenue retention and other metrics like that for paying out big bonuses. And I said big.
Yeah, big. It's got to be big. Absolutely.
It has to be big. In this market, it has to be big. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Now more than ever. Absolutely.
More than ever.
So where do you think, if like different companies are tackling this, you know, from an early stage, huge variation in deal sizes, what do you think are the different things that you need to kind of look at within your own company to understand who to hire on this CS team, how to structure their comp, like what percentage, all that stuff? Maybe let's like walk through kind of building it up. Somebody who's listening now is saying like, okay, now's the time to actually invest in this team. I need to do that now. Where do they start?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like all things, data needs to drive it. You need to really have an understanding of like where you're going to invest. It's going to start out as a cost center, and you need to have leadership coming in that's helping you bridge that gap between cost center and revenue generating team, and that it's expressing that to you, right? That they're savvy enough with being able to give you good indicators of when that's going to happen, just like you would have in sales and other departments. But I think if you're really looking at how to do this, you really need to make sure that you're looking at the value of your customers as you set this up, right? Like customer success teams need to be built around what you're trying to execute against. So if you have product that is, you know, low ARR, MRR type of product, and you've got thousands and thousands of customers, those customers still matter. But what you want to do is you save your money and your scalability, right? If you want to get, you can get couch change by making process changes and other things, but where you really get the dollars to hire great talent for your top tier customers is you scale the lower tiers to be more self-sufficient. And that's where I coach companies to get really granular. I'm talking about communities where you can, where customers can answer their own questions. I'm talking about using software out there like WalkMe and others where you create like, you know, reusable content. I mean, especially in today's day and age, customers want to watch their onboarding program in their pajamas on a video. Like nobody likes to stare at other people anymore. I don't. Like I can sometimes. But you know what I'm saying? Like you make it really scalable. And the more money you save on repeatable processes for like your bottom and mid-level tiers, the more money you have for that white glove treatment that you're going to need for like your top customers.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at like automation, tech, communities, that kind of thing to kind
100%,
of help 100%. Scale that lower tier bit.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then what type of tech enablement do you have just across the board as a CSM team? What should you have to use?
I mean, I'm kind of agnostic. Forgive me for this. I applaud anyone that's gone out there and built a CS tool. But I oftentimes think that customer success gets tied to these tools. And then they're having to work their programs into these tools. And I think there's good tools out there, but I stay agnostic. I mean, really, it depends on what you're trying to do to get the right tech stack. And that's the number one question people ask me. What CS tools do I use? Well, it depends. You know, like if you have high volume interactions with customers and lots and lots and lots of customers, then Intercom is a great tool for support to use. If you need really, you know, specialized macros and some additional bells and whistles, then Zendesk is a tool that's still very valuable for that support side of things. And I think more and more of these tools are coming up that are valuable. So my suggestion is, and that's just support, you know, with customer success, you've got, you know, the big dogs like Gainsight, you got Tatango, you've got Churn Zero, you've got, you know, Catalyst is a newcomer. And I have recommended different tools to different people over time. And it all depends on what they are building, right? Client success is another one. And the thing with all of them is some of them are more engineering heavy. So do you have the bandwidth on your side of the house to build out, you know, the mapping of these programs? Some of them are a little easier plug and play. My recommendation to anyone is that, you know, you're going to need a support tool and you know, you're going to need an implementation / CS tool. So dedicate the time to have a demo from each and find out which one it is that works best for you. They all have great things. Like they're all super smart, but they all have challenges and things that you would have to look at and weigh your odds against. Right?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And their salespeople isn't going to tell you that. So go ask community members. That's where community is great. Breakout CS is a great community. It's my community that I own. Like this is a great place that, you know, people ask these questions. And then you have people that are speaking from the heart of using these tools versus, you know, a sales individual that's working their tail off to hit quota, which, you know, sure. God bless them. We all like appreciate it, but hey, they're trying to get the deal. So do your extra homework there too.
Yeah, cool. And how do you think the kind of hiring interviewing process changes if you're looking for this type of CS person rather than maybe coming from that more customer service kind of model. Because I imagine that there's a different skill set required. It's not just this pure relationship driven, like you said, you can make people happy, but there's another skill set we're now requiring. So how do you find that great mix of those two people?
Yeah. And listen, here's the thing so this is hard. This is a two-part question for me. There's the fact that you've got a lot of people that have done it for a while, and that's all great and all, but that's also a part of the challenge we have with not seeing a lot of diversity in this world, right? Is that we're just hiring people that went to these big schools that have 5, 6, 10 years experience in something. And myself is included in that, right? Like, I was very privileged in my upbringing, but at the same time, like, you look around, you don't see a lot of diversity with that. And so I think that's where I am a real big advocate, and where I put a lot of my passion is building out training programs and saying, like, hire more junior people, my best talents on my teams have been like baristas, or I had somebody that was a checker at Target, had somebody that was a newscaster, ended up being one of the best, you know, employees I ever had in my life. Like, hire these people and then put them through customized customer success training. You can hire people like me to build out those programs. You can do it yourself. Just make sure they're strong and they're solid. Bring in your product in that, and then you can hire across the board. But you really need to make sure that there are ways that you're focusing on individuals that have the strength and the skill set to hold a good conversation. You know, you need a good moral compass to be a good CSM. You need to be able to speak from integrity for the customer, but also for supporting the company. I've oftentimes seen CSMs that get in the habit of fighting for the customer and then almost, you know, abandoning what they need to do on the other side. You're a liaison. You're standing up for your company as well. And so that takes a level of intelligence and skills that, you know, can be trained, but also can be something to look for in that innate candidate that just kind of gets it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting point. It can be definitely a difficult position to be in. And I think especially in a growing company where there's lots of change maybe happening in the offerings, there's like reorgs happening, all sorts. It can be a funny place where you might be met with some of that kind of negative feedback from customers. And it's like, yeah, you got to represent your company well, support the customer, meet their emotional and work needs. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And something that I was speaking with one of my colleagues today about bartenders being some of the best sales reps we've ever met. Service, the bar, great talkers, can do a little upsell. Like, yeah, you got to look in those places. Absolutely.
Oh my God. I wish I could make everybody that's a CSM, like, go to waiting table college or something, like their own little, because everyone that I know that, and myself included, my first job in this industry was waiting tables. And you really learn the art, I think, that can go into sales and customer success of like doing a good job makes more money for you. Yeah. Like being friendly, being kind, being helpful, having, you know, a quick return on things they need, like water refill, like, you know, drinks and making sure they're taken care of, and the small details, like that's where you make your money, in this industry, I think, in sales and customer success. And here's the thing, right? Like, a lot of times people come to me as a CS leader and they say, I have somebody in sales and they have a heart of gold, but they're not good at sales, and we want to put them over in, customer success. And I'm like, cool. I don't want your people that aren't good at sales. I want your top sales people to come over to customer success, right? Because it's not a catch-all place for just a heart of gold. You know, that's it. And I don't know. I don't like that saying in general, right? Like, you can be somebody who loves a company and cares and be in the wrong spot, right? Mm-hmm. And switching somebody from sales to customer success that's not achieving their goals is just a bad idea. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think that's a perfect kind of segue into this idea about the sales and customer success relationship and how that can sometimes be not a great one. What have you seen in kind of mitigating that, breaking down those silos? Like, how do you mend that in this model?
Yeah, I mean, I call it beauty and the beast, right? And really the only way you can mend it is in having really good leadership that communicates well together. And if you have one bad leader on one of those teams, it's really hard to do it. And when I look back at my pretty long career now, the times that I had the most success were when I had a leader in sales that wanted to partner with me, that saw the value of it, wanted to support me, and vice versa. And it's kind of interesting because my business partner today, the CEO of our company, is somebody who was the CRO at a company that I was a VP of customer success for. And we just hit it off because he just saw the value in it. And we made so much money for that company together because we were smart and we worked together. Like, we didn't fight against each other. I think when you have insecurities in leadership, it trickles down to your individual contributors. Another problem is not having defined swim lanes, not clearly understanding where the accountability is. I can't tell you how many companies I go into and they're just wasting so much money on sales and CS doing the same initiatives, and they're just not talking to one another. It is 100% guaranteed that if you're having issues with sales and CS, it's communication, and that you're not being supported correctly somewhere, right?
Yeah. And what do you think that communication cadence should look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think you said, I like to do projects together. Like, one of my favorite things to do with customer success and sales is to meet once a month and accomplish something big together. So start out with like the ideal customer profile. Why does the ICP live in sales? Like, customer success is the one that's in the field dealing with them. And so have the ideal customer profile built out and then revamped and relooked at by sales and CS together. I think in addition to that, it is really defining who owns what. And I think you've really got to lay out the customer journey at this point in a company. If you don't have a customer journey, you're doing this wrong. You need to lay it out. And then you need to understand it's karaoke. Where is the ball? Where is the ball at all times? And when is it in CS's hand? And when is it in sales' hands? When is it in product management's hands? When is it, you know, and outside of that, like, there can be other factors that can come in on this as well. But mainly it's sales and CS that are going to be needing to know where that ball is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have some ideas around kind of having them deliberately work together in kind of a pod, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So you force them into serendipity with this pod system. No, maybe not. That might be dramatic. But what I mean is, I think that if you have focus, it can be regionally centered, right? And so I spend a lot of my time coaching companies on the value of this pod system. And so, you know, let's say that you have a software that is, a B2B product, and you've got customers all over the place, and sales is already designed to focus on these certain regions that they own. Putting CS into those pods as well can be really magical. And you can also put product management in them as well, if that's an aspect of your business. But what you're doing is, not only are you seeing what works well with different, you know, personality types, you're also seeing what doesn't work well. And you're able to see, is this a system issue or is this a person issue? And if it's a person issue, how do we coach to that? But you know, you end up getting really powerful pods, and then you can look around you and try to build that around the company. And I don't know, I've now done the pod system pretty religiously with the majority of customers I work with. And I've seen little failure from that happening.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the customer success kind of playbook and training and that kind of stuff looks like on an ongoing basis? Because at the moment, a lot of companies put a lot of focus in that way on sales. A lot of methodologies out there teach you how to do that in sales. But if we're requiring that skill set of our CSMs, presumably we want to help them work at it too. So what does that look like on that side of the revenue generating organization?
Like the playbook and the
playbook and training and all that stuff for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the things I like to do is make sure there's accountability across the entire organization, everything from your client facing teams to HR in the back to your executive assistants, like everybody has some kind of accountability to the customer. And so I like to do exercises where it's really cool to do it at the beginning of the year, right? We're going to roll out the customer journey and we're going to go through that together. And we're going to all speak to what we own in that and what's transitioned and what do we need from other departments for that to be successful and vice versa. And so depending on how far along as a company you are, the customer journey map can be something, especially remotely, done a lot now with those, like, is it like Miro or those other tools that you can kind of draw it out? Like, that's what I've seen a lot of people do that. It's successful. You know, you can use a whiteboard if you're in person together. And then of course, if you get a little bit more sophisticated and larger and stuff like that, then there's actual tools that you can use, but you need to map out this journey, right? And then you need to use that mapping out and put those milestones into your tech stack so everybody can pull reports and see how it's going. But, you know, for me, I like to start, I don't care how big a company is. My first advice is that you literally make what I call an ugly doc, which is this presentation that is just page after page after page of where the customer customer goes through the whole journey, and it's very granular, and it passes through every person in every department, and leaders like look over it, make sure nothing's left. And then you start to clean it up, and then you have the version of where you are today. And like, how do we make this more impactful for the end user? How do we make this more efficient? Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to find like those moments that you want to ask for feedback. And you know, as you're building this out, you can do all kinds of stuff with it, but training from that is going to come where the areas of uncertainty are. So when you see people kind of staring at you and going, what happens in this stage? I don't know. Then that's where you need training, but just going through the process is training itself. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of kind of efficiencies across that customer journey, what do you see as the ideal handoff from sales to customer success? I'm sure it varies, like going back to what you were talking about with like the high volume, low deal size, you want it to be a little more automated and taken care of. But let's say like a big deal size, you know, big ARR deal, it's been a consultative sale. There's going to need to be pretty hands-on CS working with that client. What does that transition look like ideally?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. I mean, so it depends on, I like to tier out my CSM. So I'll have some more junior CSMs that I call customer success associates. And then I have customer success managers. And then I have senior customer success managers, right? And so for the more junior CSMs, they're going to be focused on that scalable, much, you know, smaller book, like a larger book of business, but smaller, you know, value or dollar add to their book of business. And so, you know, for them, I build it out where the transition for sales is going to be pretty automated. It's going to be like a trigger in Salesforce or your CS tool. That's basically like, these people are now yours. Congratulations. And making sure that the correct data is collected from the customer, so you're not having to ask them for information that should be collected. But as you get higher up, the more responsibility you have to that, right? And the more white glove treatment. So when you get to your senior CSMs, I like to actually have the sales team work with us and bring us in when they're 90% likely to close. So when you're hitting that trigger, I get pushback a lot, right? Because it's like, well, sales guys say everything is 90% likely, or girls say everything is 90% likely to close. Well, you know, that's a leadership problem. Stay on them. They should be more accurate than that. But it does work well to bring us in at that like senior level, 90% likely to close, because we're helping to build a relationship, which can help solidify that signature as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that is where probably the first biggest breakdown comes in the communication. And that's where we get that whole overpromise, underdeliver, CS bearing the brunt of whatever that is. And that's probably a lot of what feeds, you know, the lack of cohesion on those two teams, but that's a great way to mitigate that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's look at that. Like, you brought up the restaurant industry earlier, and I like that as an analogy, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing as if sales comes in and they're the hostess and they're like, everything's going to be great. It's a 10 minute wait. And then it's an hour and a half, mm-hmm. and everyone hates us when we go to tell them, you know? So I think that's the deal, is like, you got to set appropriate expectations. And if you bring CS in at that 90% mark, they can kind of help, you know, mitigate the risk of things being said and protect the salesperson. So the salesperson can kind of be good cop, bad cop in those scenarios as well, which I think you need to be. You need to have that kind of a dynamic. And then we can come in and be like, listen, you know, Sarah's great and all, but the truth of the matter is I just talked to engineering and XYZ, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. Well, I think that's a perfect place to kind of wrap it up. We've walked through the customer journey. We've walked through how to mend this old school style that a lot of companies are really stuck with, and how we should, you know, be focusing on tying our CS people to revenue, why they should have a seat at that table, because they're often more hands-on with the customer than anybody else. So they should have arguably one of the biggest voices and biggest seats at that table. If people want to learn more from you, Leah, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of places. One, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I like to, you know, fight for a couple of causes on LinkedIn if anybody follows me. And that includes my passion around customer success. I don't see myself as an influencer in customer success. I see myself as an executive that's been in business for quite some time. And I like to share that knowledge, but you can catch my classes at several communities that support me. And then also you can hire me at bettergrowth.com to help you build the stuff and to make it all happen as well. And then, like I said, if you want some free advice with great members, then there's breakoutcs.com, which is a community that I started as a tantrum. I was just annoyed one day that like, I couldn't get the answers I needed. And I felt like I was treated differently as a consultant than just a grassroots user. And so I created Breakout CS and it took off, and we've got, you know, about 1,000 members and we continue to grow, but it's a great resource as well. Yeah.
Very cool. We'll make sure to point everyone towards all those resources. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It was an absolute pleasure having you. I love talking about this topic because obviously it's pretty sales heavy on the podcast. We need to get more of the CS stuff in here though. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me help people not be a CFM. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you to all of you for joining us on another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Leah join us and share their knowledge. We'll catch you again next time.